It's the Gadget Grill on 88.1 Radio 2RDJ, the only Gadget Grill that could possibly have this many computers in the studio at once. And we're having a celebration today of the sorts of things that we could possibly celebrate. It's been the Writers' Festival. There's been some Empire thing.
It's been the weekend. Today is Empire Day for those of you who...
What is Empire? It predates me.
Yes, it does. It almost predates me as well. Good evening and welcome to the Gadget Grill. My name is Gary Stark. Sitting on the other side here is Lee Stark.
Aloha.
And Empire Day was a celebration of the British Empire. It used to be cracker night. We'd get a half a day off school. We'd go and set fire to the next door neighbour's fence. Sorry, we'd have a bonfire.
Yeah, we'd let
off crackers. We'd have cracker nights. We'd go and scare the neighbour's cats and the neighbour's dogs. We'd have fun.
What do you do these days? Watch Doctor Who and have a warm beer?
British Empire.
Remember
the British Empire?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
What are we doing on the Gadget Grill tonight, Lee?
Tonight we're on the Gadget Grill. Tonight we're talking about GPS technology. It's more actually the technology behind GPS.
I think
we've explored GPS before, but now we've actually got someone who actually knows what they're talking about to come and tell us. Because
That excludes either us.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why we have someone from Navtech, one of the companies who help produce basically the technology in it. And we're not talking handheld mapping devices at this point. We're actually talking the technology that creates the maps, which means cars with lots of cameras and satellite sort of things on top.
The car was cool. I've got to say, well, the car itself wasn't.
No, the
all
car
that
itself
cool.
was a Ford or something?
No, it was just something like a Ford Explorer like that.
The Ford Explorer.
But the gear inside it was cool.
This is kind of relaxing with this music, actually.
You like that?
I'm going to start with a classical piece every week. Yes. It's a precursor to Collins.
We'll give
Collins
a prize to the first
show.
Listener who calls in and tells us what it is.
Does anyone know the number?
It's a good
thing we have no prizes.
97440881.
Crap, now we have to dig up a prize.
I'm sure we can find something, and maybe a USB stick or something like that.
Yeah, USB stick. Woo! Everyone wants USB sticks, yeah!
Yeah, we can do something like that. You're listening to The Gadget Grill here on Radio 2RDJ. FM 88.1, www.radio2rdj.com. And what else are we talking about? We're going to talk about the Power Monkey, aren't we?
We're going to talk about Power Monkey, which is not a monkey. That was a seal, not a monkey. You really have your animals. Old MacDonald didn't teach you what was really on that farm.
No,
did
he didn't. You don't want to know what MacDonald had.
I don't really want to know what Old MacDonald taught you. I think it's probably illegal in some states, probably most in this country.
Except Arkansas.
Yeah, you're right.
Or Tasmania.
Tonight we're also talking about Power Monkey, which is a solar power charger for your phones and for your... it's a little bit more than a solar power charger. It's your phones, your portable gaming systems.
Portable power source for your portable electronic devices.
Yeah, yeah.
And it helps you get more out of your devices within certain constraints.
Theoretically, yeah. And we're also going to talk briefly about the RIAA today, the Recording Industry Association of America, sort of like our ARIA, but these guys seem to want to sue people a lot.
Yeah.
We'll talk briefly about that. But first, to interrupt this, I really don't want to interrupt the music. I like it.
You're liking George Frideric?
I'm really... It's kind of relaxing, but
we're only
running it for this one little bit here because, you know, I don't really care about the British Empire. I'm Australian and a bad one.
Neither does anybody else, actually.
So we'll start this off with some music that's definitely not British. I mean, this comes from New Orleans. This is Los Hombres Calientes with Carnival. It's the Gadget Grill on 88.1 Radio 2RDJ, jamming and moving our heads along to Los Hombres Calientes.
We've got to settle down now. Put the margaritas and salsa away.
You just mentioned we had margaritas, and so I told you not to mention the truth.
I know.
You're supposed to lie.
I know.
We had nothing in here.
We had banana milkshakes.
We had banana milkshakes. Yeah, smoothies. The Carnival from Volume 5 of Los Hombres Calientes is
good music.
Constantly
good
evolving
choice of
volume
music.
Discs. Yeah, because I have good choice in music, you know.
As opposed to good taste.
Yeah, great. Yeah, yeah. I can't. I don't have any good taste. You're listening to The Gadget Grill on 88.1 Radio 2RDJ. If you like anything we're talking about or want to see any of the...
Then you have no taste at all.
You probably don't. If you want to see any of the videos where where we talk about or we produce reviews of or some of the interview stuff from tonight and any other show, head to www.gadgetgrill.com.au. And if for some reason you're listening to this on your stereo, you could actually be listening to it on the web at www.radio2rdj.com.
Yes, you could. And in the news today, Sophos have...
Who? Wait, Sophos.
Sophos.
Who?
Antivirus.
What do they produce?
They have produced a Klingon antivirus applications.
Yes. Hold on. I'm going to embarrass myself. Klingon, duh! The Jatla, ah! I just asked you if you could speak Klingon.
Dubbed Klingon antivirus, this software is actually a tweaked version of the threat detection software, but it's been translated into Klingon.
Everyone's cashing in on this. You know, Google have a Klingon version of Google, and the Klingon Language Institute, KLI.org, you know, I'm just saying this because at one point I was a Star Trek fan, a Trekkie, Trekker, whatever you want to call them. That's why I asked
now
you.
Now you're just.
Now I'm just. That's why I asked you a second ago if you could speak Klingon in Klingon, which obviously you couldn't, so you couldn't answer it in Klingon. I'm not even going to talk about the logic of that.
No.
But everyone's cashing in on the Star Trek thing. The Sims released a trailer for The Sims 3, and they did a Star Trek movie to go with it. Everyone's doing it.
How about the Poissons?
The what?
The Poissons.
The Poissons?
Yes, you mentioned The Sims. I was thinking of the Poissons.
Wow, I don't even know what you're on about. Can I talk about something really cool?
Talk about something cool.
Okay, Australians have just produced something incredibly cool. They're working on at Swinburne's University of Technology in Victoria, I think it is.
Yes.
Five-dimensional optical recording. Now, this is the quote, because none of us can understand what this actually means.
I can tell you what it means. They're using different ways of pushing the data onto the storage media. They're using, for instance, polarizing lenses, and as they move the polarizing lens around, you lay the data down in a different manner. So you can lay down four or five different layers of data, four different items of data, in exactly the same physical location by using polarizing lenses and different means of reading and writing the data. That is very interesting and very cool.
Hold on. Not wanting to call your bluff, but they actually employ nanometer-scale particles of gold as a recording medium.
That's right. But by polarizing the light as they're writing it to there...
1.6 terabytes on a single disk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is a lot of data.
Yeah, that's more than my computer has.
Yeah, I've got 2.5 tera, I've got 5 terabytes of storage on my computer, but that's still a lot of.
That's an immense amount of storage.
Especially just on that's just on one the equivalent of one CD-ROM is what they're talking about.
Indeed.
So that is very cool and very interesting. If it takes off, the problem is that there are vested interests in keeping Blu-ray alive. And in keeping Blu-ray alive,
A lot of people,
those vested interests may not want to see this succeed.
Companies like Seagate have come along, and even Western Digital, and said that they don't see much future for Blu-ray on the basis of, even Samsung have said it to a degree in some ways, because hard disks will begin to take over quite seriously.
Well, that's right. Well, hard disks and, of course, solid-state storage.
Yeah, you know, memory
cards. So I tend to agree with that as well. Blu-ray is going to be interesting to see whether it actually does survive or not.
$40-50 a disk, I'm not a fan of that purchase. Yeah.
A court case in New Jersey has seen the source code...
That's that place in between New York and somewhere else, right?
That's the one, yeah. Yeah. New York State, actually.
No one really goes there.
Oh, it's a nice place to visit, but you certainly... no, I shouldn't say that. Hi, Carl, how are you?
I like Jersey best.
Yeah, Carly, Carl lives in Jersey.
Oh, good for Carl.
Yes.
Carl.
You know Carl.
Yeah, I know Carl, but you can't say Carl on the radio and expect someone on the other end to know what it is. Go on.
Well, Carl may be listening.
He's not listening.
I could tell him to listen to the podcast.
Just shut up and move on.
A court case in New Jersey has seen the core source code for the Alco test 7110 Mark 3C reviewed by an independent software firm.
I don't know what that is.
That is a breath test machine.
Oh.
The firmware within it was reviewed and found to be seriously lacking.
Oh.
Bugs, stubs. Yeah, it's a stub.
Do we in Australia from the police force use that device?
I don't know. I've been trying to find out. I haven't been able to find that out. But there's stub code in there that is marked that we need to come back to this later to finish this code.
Mm.
And that is in the
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow.
And
that's almost breaking, Jim.
And there's stuff where, you know, sort of averages are calculated incorrectly. They're just mathematically in error. And this is the stuff that is actually doing your you know, sort of you go out and you breathe into the breathalyzer, and it's supposed to be telling you accurately what your blood alcohol level is.
Wow.
Now, I do not know whether this gear is used in Australia, but this has very serious implications for anyone who uses this sort of hardware.
Absolutely. Do you want a free iPhone, by the way?
I'd love a free iPhone. Another one.
Another free iPhone. Yeah. Move to Japan.
Okay.
Move to Japan, enroll in the Aoyama Gaoken University. 500 students are going to receive free iPhones as part of the new Mobile and Net Society Education Training Program. And their school is going to use the GPS technology to track if the students actually go to classes.
Right.
Which is kind of cool.
Okay.
I dig that.
Okay. Craigslist is suing the South Carolina Attorney General because of porn sites and freedom of speech. There's going to be some very interesting battles with Craigslist. Craigslist is a sales site.
That's a really weird sales site,
yeah, but
too.
Anything goes on there, including ads for prostitutes and all sorts of stuff like that. Whorehouses and that sort of thing. And the South Carolina Attorney General wants to be the arbiter of everybody's morals, and so they're trying to get Craigslist to stop advertising them, and Craigslist has gone back to them and said, sorry, that is an infringement of my civil rights in America. Freedom of speech, I can advertise what I want, where I want. There's going to be some interesting court battles going on in Carolina.
I've got more iPhone news because I'm just an iPhone whore myself. I advertise on Craigslist quite frequently for my iPhone whoring. The iPhone 32 gig has been spotted this week on a T-Mobile site in a different part of the world. It was withdrawn pretty quickly.
I wonder why.
It goes to it adds to the amount of rumors that have come out this week. The speculation keeps growing. Now it's expected to have a minimum of 16 and 32 gig in the new iPhone.
Rubberized back.
Video functionality.
Video capability.
Finally.
3.2 megapixel
camera. Yeah, I think that'll
camera.
Be, if that really is the case, I think it's just too small once again.
Yep.
Autofocus camera. And I've heard FM radio and an electronic compass, which will add to the accelerometer and make GPS better.
Yes.
I've also heard turn-by-turn navigation might be included
through every season, turn. There is a season. And you've got one other very interesting. Let's get to the RIAA.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's important with MP3s, there was a big story a couple months ago regarding people at Last FM, the RIAA, asked for a user's listening habits. It was basically to find out people who had unreleased tracks on their computers. So if you download, say, Dave Matthews Band, Shake the Monkey, from their new album, and you had it on your computer and you uploaded that information to Last FM, the RIAA wanted to know about it. So RIAA asked Last FM, and now this is gone, and Last FM gave it, but not quite. CBS Interactive, which owned Last FM, gave the information. So that's technically what's happened. But it's had us questioning something, because now that it's been found out that CBS Interactive were the ones basically responsible for handing this IP address
over. They basically told their children to give us this information, and we're going to give it to some unrelated third party and breach our users' security.
Well, we just had a quick look here through the Last FM privacy policy, and we can't see anything there that says your IP information is going to be handed out if needed by someone.
It basically says anonymous information, and we may share your email address.
With third party.
If you give it to us.
Listing habits are in there, but IP address is not something that we can find in their terms and conditions. Maybe that'll be changed very quickly. But the question that we had to bring throughout all this is that CBS Interactive own a ton of websites. We're talking CNET, Metacritic, GameSpot, Last FM included. And if you're looking at a site like Metacritic, say, a lot of people put up their, before reviewers get a chance to, reviews of things like games that haven't come out, movies that haven't come out, music that hasn't come out. The question is, at that point, will CBS, and they probably won't, but it's a valid question, will they then be able to give out that information of the IP addresses of those people who have put reviews for items that haven't come out? Because that's what the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, have asked for in this, IP addresses of people who had songs that they weren't supposed to have.
Yeah.
And it also begs the question, like, I'm a fan of a band called The Deer Hunter, and I'm about to get a CD of theirs on pre-release. That's something I've paid for the right for.
Yeah.
But if the RIAA don't see that as being properly released, am I then liable to be grab for that exact same thing.
It's a pretty ugly sort of a concept, isn't it?
There's a lot of unanswered questions here, and I'm not really sure if it's... I mean, I know it's CBS's right to hand over that information, and they're technically complying with the law that the IAAA set down.
They're not obliged to. They've got to protect the privacy of their customers unless they're compelled by law. That's how ISPs work.
But the RAAA would work off of the law thing. I mean,
the RAAA can ask... And
but the
CBS,
Digital Millennium Copyright Act is a really flawed...
CBS should be saying, give us a subpoena. You know, you've gone to the court and proved that you want that you have a legal right to have this,
The RAAA are claiming it was something going to use for internal use only, but...
Oh. Yeah, what's internal
why
use?
Why ask for an IP address if it's going to be used for internal use only?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Speaking of music, let's play a song that we can't be pinned for, because this has been released. It was released last year. This is Jason Mraz with the Dynamo of Volition. I'm a brand new addition to the old edition with the love unconditional. And I'm a drama abolitionist. Damn, no opposition to my proposition. Half of a man, half magician, half a politician. Holding the mic like ammunition in my vision. Check this out!
You've been working hard all morning and now it's time to relax for lunch. What better place than with your pals in the shed? And what better shed than the one right here on Tuesdays on 2RDJ between 1 and 3?
So please come and join Peter Worthington, that was him, and me, Gary Stark. We're your pals in the shed on 2RDJ FM 88.1.
And don't forget your lunch.
If you think he's crazy, you've yet to hear Andrew Beale every Sunday from midday, featuring none more than himself. The Andrew Beale Show, only on 2RDJ.
Radio 1.1, Radio 2RDJ. This is the Gadget Grill with Lee and Gary Stark over there on the other mic.
No, I'm over here on this mic. You're on the other mic.
No, I'm on the other mic. Wait.
That's what I just said.
Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to the Gadget Grill, and right now we're talking... Well, we're actually going to talk. We've got some professionals talk, right, Dad?
Yes, we have. We managed to get into CBIT. They actually let us get in the
excitement of CBIT. We said last week, there wasn't a lot that was there that was good.
They actually let us in, though. They let us into CBIT, and we got to talk with Kirk Mitchell from Navtech. And Kirk had some really interesting stuff to tell us about.
Yeah, just didn't shut up speaking to him. Thanks for that, by the way.
He had some interesting stuff to say. He was telling us about how they put together all the maps. Basically, they put together a database and all sorts of stuff. The van that they had, the gear in the van, was really good. Rather than let me rave on about it, let's have a listen to what Kirk had to say himself. This is Kirk Mitchell from Navtech.
We've got almost 80 countries worldwide, about 76 at the moment. So we have field teams who actually drive the roads in vehicles like this. In Australia, we've got about 30. Basically, what we call geographic analysts who every day drive the road. They have a driver in the driver's seat. You can see here at the front, there's what we call a data 911 terminal, similar to what the police use in the US.
Right.
And so we have highly trained geographic analysts who are sitting in front of that. We're driving down the roads, we're collecting one-way streets, turn restrictions, all the kind of things that you would expect to
signs,
be in an AS system.
Yep. Red light cameras.
Whether there's a bridge, or there's overpass, underpass.
Right.
What the speed sign is of that particular road. If there's basically a suggested speed you should be taking on a corner, we pick all that stuff up. Collecting all those attributes.
Is that being done manually, or do you have cameras that are recording this as well?
Good question. On the top of the car, you can see... It's a camera, what we call a multi-view camera. It's 270 degrees of coverage on that.
Right.
It's high res.
That's better than this thing, then.
That's right.
Slightly better than that, yes. So what do we got? We got five lenses, am I
That's saying? Right. It gives us 270 degrees of view. You can see there, actually, the front. You'll see each of the different forward-facing, rear-facing, side-facing cameras.
So we've got five forward plus one rear.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the thing about us is that we collect this stuff, what we would call as verification. Because when we're actually in the car, real-time, collecting this information...
It's very easy to miss something.
Exactly.
Yep.
So we store all this, got huge servers in the back of the car. or hard disk drives. We then each day download that to massive servers, and we have access to that at any point in time. So if, say, in a year's time, someone says, well, you actually got the sign, the road name incorrect, we can actually pull up exactly that possession, look at the camera, and indeed, we actually got a couple of the...
And you can see, effectively, as a speed sign changes, you've got evidence of what it was at a point in time, or if a street name or something like that changes, then yeah. Let's presume for a moment that Sydney's got quite a few road tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we lose GPS information as we enter the tunnels.
Yep.
How do you record the location of items within the tunnel, because there are road signs within the tunnel,
sure.
or do they not get included?
Yep.
And what happens also when, for instance, you lose connection to the satellite that's telling the driver where he is?
It's a really good question. Because what we're doing here is not just using standard GPS as you have in your normal nav system.
You're using the GPS.
Differential GPS.
Right.
Or not even AGPS, differential GPS. And so you can see in the top again, if we go back to the roof of the car, there should be and there is. Another device up
here. The little antenna.
Yeah, which is an FM-based device. That's picking up a highly accurate point, which was then compared against the GPS here, and we can get sub-meter accuracy in our GPS. So when we lose that signal, it doesn't happen just in tunnels. It can happen in woody, treed areas. We
just
can't
just
actually,
going through Eddy Avenue at Central Railway.
We can't do what's called tracing. So we can't actually build the road by the E-trace. But we can still verify things, because you know relatively on the map we have, because of a base map, where positions are. So that's the key thing there.
Right. The stuff that they had in the van was really quite amazing, all different antennas, the screen getting six different views. And
I liked how they had a Wacom sort of GPS, sort of a graphic tablet on side there, so they could draw things and make sure. You know, that was cool. I can imagine being in that car, but I can't imagine driving the roads as much as they do.
I think it'd be a fun thing to spend a couple of days in the car with them.
This is your application for a job, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Spend a couple of days and just see how they do it. You know, what they were telling me was that... to do something like, for instance, the North Sydney exit off the Harbour Bridge, they've got to do that. It's just travelling north on the Sydney Harbour Bridge and exiting onto North Sydney. There's three different exits that you can take there, of course. But they've got to traverse that road maybe half a dozen times, maybe more, in order to make sure they capture everything. So they go north, go back across the bridge, go and do it again, go back across the bridge, do it again.
You or I complain about a toll each way ourselves, but they have to do it lots of different times.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I mean, their toll tag must really ramp up.
Yeah, and they'd have to do it during the busy time of the day, because otherwise they'd be paying overtime on their workers.
Yeah.
Let's continue with Kirk Mitchell and hear what else he had to say about this sort of stuff.
Obviously, you've got the cars driving around in the city a lot of the time, but how about in the country? There's a lot of roads there. How do you know that you're covering every single road?
That's a really good question as well. So whilst we drive most of the roads, or we're the population of Australia. In fact, we've driven about 82% of the population of Australia. For everything outside in the country, we rely on the government. We actually get our source map from the government.
So there's something like the Forestry Commission maps, that sort
of
stuff?
Well, not quite. There's a body called the PSMA, the Public Sector Mapping Agency, who's our partner.
Right.
And that's the collection of all the different state mapping authorities and federal. Mm-hmm. So Geoscience Australia. They collectively, every quarter, put together their mesh together their maps and provide that to us. So whenever a new subdivision opens up, they know about that first. We then get that information and can incorporate that into a map. So for places like Wagga Wagga, where it's not our interest to drive Wagga Wagga frequently, because really there could be one roundabout there and maybe a traffic light, but things don't change there often. But in Sydney, things are changing all the time.
Yeah.
So we really focus our field team on the urban population, where things change all the time, and rely on the government to provide us accurate information on the urban road, or the non-urban roads. The
okay, areas. So what that's saying then is that if the New South Wales RTA has put a new speed camera up somewhere on the Hume Highway, then that may not appear within a much longer period.
You're getting it. It's very good. So when I say non-urban, we then have what we call basically major motorways or functional road classes one. So important kind of like roads that people travel on. We'll drive them twice a year.
Okay.
So the major motorways, we definitely, even though it's in the country, it's in our interest to drive them frequently, and we do. We make sure we keep on top of those roads. So the interconnecting roads, we definitely drive frequently.
Okay.
But on the speed, you're talking about speed a bit and safety cameras. We've just launched, in fact, we just announced this week that we have speed limits. So we actually have gone out and collected the speed signs for all capital cities in Australia, basically from functional road classes 1 to 4, so the major, minor, and secondary roads. Everything except your back urban streets, which really don't change too much anyway, and they're all usually 50. So that's the very first time in Australia that kind of database has been launched. And what that will allow nav systems very soon is a proper speed warning. So it can actually determine from the GPS the speed you're going, know exactly what the speed limit is in that particular road segment, suggest if you're going 110
some of the current GPSs where you can set a warning based upon a speed that you select.
Yes.
But that's not real time based upon what you're finding.
Yep.
And what you're saying is that you've got the ability to update that within about a 6 to 9 month cycle.
Correct.
Yep.
But more so too that we actually now have the actual location of that speed limit at where it starts and where it ends. So that's the very first time that's there. So we're really excited about that. We think that's going to really change the game a little bit in the next 6 months.
Okay.
Yes, it is. What's interesting about that, of course, is that there's been all this talk over the last week or so about having GPS controlling the speed of your cars.
Yeah, which I think it's stupid.
It's stupid, but about the technology, what Kirk was saying, of course, was that the technology for doing that isn't quite there to do that in real time yet, and it's, you know, sort of there's a time delay involved in getting the information as they capture it out to their end user clients.
That's right. Interestingly, GM have found a way to get around this, despite the financial crisis GM find themselves in.
Oh, yes.
They're working on some crash detection technology, which I don't know how it works, but assuming that works, then the concept of GPS slowing down via GPS tracking wouldn't even be needed. And I can't imagine GPS slowdown technology to be all that logical, especially with the amount of cars that would then be reliant on it.
Well, it's something that's got to be done at the manufacturer's level, because it's really got to be slotted in to work with cruise control.
That's a cost that even from the beginning the end user is going to feel.
Of course, of course. Now, speaking of end users, Navtech have their clients are not end users, but their clients are people who design the GPS systems that we see in the stores.
So you've got people like Garmin who produce GPSs.
That's right. Yep. And Nokia who produce cell phones,
Ovi technology and whatnot.
That's right. And another one of their clients was Sony, and we had a chat to all of these people.
Sony, people who make cameras.
Right. Well, people who make appliances.
Okay.
And
GPS-controlled dishwasher.
That's right. GPS-controlled dishwasher. It'll only wash the dish if it's going at the right speed and if it's in a school zone.
Sadly, that's not what we're actually talking about.
No, but Sony have embedded some of this GPS technology in some of their camcorders, and we spoke with one of the Sony people, so let's have a listen to that.
Okay, now the obvious use for the GPS on the Handycam is so that as you're filming, you're on a holiday, it tells you where
you are. Tagging, exactly, yes. You got it. So basically when you shoot a video, wherever you are, it will register, and as you can see, my colleague has taken some videos from yesterday, and you can see the camera has pinpointed the locations for you on the either side of the Darling Harbour, and you can see the footage on the left-hand side. And what you
the red one being the red pin being the currently selected
the current
item.
Selected ones. Okay. And all you need to do now is you just use our touchscreen. Tap that particular video and it will show you the video from that exact spot. It even gives you the exact
latitude
and altitude.
You know, I actually thought that was a really cool technology. I mean, not one who actually has a Sony camcorder. I use junky camcorders myself. Probably the junkiest sort there is.
The contrast between the gear that we were using and that they were using.
The Flip is a good piece of technology, but it's nowhere near that class. I mean, it's a digital webcam, and you'll find more about that when it comes out later this year. But the Sony camcorder, I'm going on a vacation later this year, and I'm doing a lot of planning, and I can actually see that video GPS tagging would be really cool, because if I'm in a part of a city like San Fran that I really want to record, and I'm never going to remember where it is again, or a jazz club I find, I can record it, and the GPS locates it, and then I can find it later again.
You can find it, you can see
or
where...
Or I can upload to YouTube, and see, YouTube can use that
geotag
info.
You'll be able to see exactly where you passed out drunk in Bourbon Street in New Orleans.
I'm not going to New Orleans.
I know that.
But you know. I have several
friends for whom that technology could have been quite useful several years ago.
It's quite cool because the GPS technology has existed in cameras for a while now. I mean, it's only really been in high-end cameras, you know, high-end digital SLRs and something like a lower... Or the Nikon P50 or P30, one of them. One of the Nikon Coolpixes had it. But yeah, I can really see that being beneficial.
Very, very interesting technology.
I guess it was the first taste of GPS technology in a video camera. Would you say that?
Certainly. Well, what we
would you say that's a good segue to go into our song?
I'd say so, yes. I would say I'd certainly say it was a good segue.
Yeah.
And the song is?
Fiona Apple with the...
Big Fiona Apple.
Yeah, no, it's not. She's quite small, actually. She's a very small person.
She doesn't come from the Big Apple?
No, I don't think she does either. It's Fiona Apple with the first taste.
Thinking late thoughts, waiting for the black to replace my blue.
Eighty-eight point one Radio 2RDJ. This is the Gadget Grill. I like the way I said it that time. I was really proud of myself.
You got it right for a change.
I got the first.
Normally, go it's the Grill.
Is this the Gadget? Is the director Ron Burgundy thing from Anchorman? Gadget Grill.
You're listening to 2RDJ FM 88.1.
Unless you're not.
In which case, you might be listening to www.radio2rdj.com on the internet.
Unless you're not, in which case you're listening to this in the future or in the past with www.gadgetgrill.com.au.
As a podcast or perhaps from the iTunes store.
I think we've mentioned our site way too many times tonight. Let's get on to something tangible, like something that recharges your phones. What could that possibly be?
Could it be a power monkey?
It could be. It could be an ape with a battery under its arse.
That's right, yeah. Let's talk about Power Monkey for a moment. The concept is that you have a little portable battery, a couple of inches long, just very easily fits in your pocket, that you can carry around with you, put in your luggage, whatever. And you recharge that, and then from that you can recharge or run your other small portable devices like your iPhone, your iPod, some other cell phone, your MP3 player.
Recharges basically every MP3 player. Yeah, everything you've got.
That comes with a number of different tips that you can plug into.
Or you can get other tips. I found that it was missing a micro USB tip, so current BlackBerry users or brand new ones are going to have to fork out for
a new
piece.
And that would affect Motorola users as well then.
Brand new Motorola users are affected as well.
Yeah. So the idea is that it becomes a universal battery power source for all sorts of different devices. You can charge your device up on the run. Now, these sort of devices have been around...
But not with the runs?
No.
Okay.
These sort of devices have been around for a little while. I've got another battery device at home that does this sort of thing. And this comes with a little wall wart that you can plug into the wall and recharge it from. But where this one is different is that it also comes with what's called a solar monkey, which is a flip-out solar cell panel. And the idea is that you just stick this out in the sun, you know, you're sitting by the beach with your cell phone.
Hasn't been all that useful this week.
No.
Hasn't been useful and in Sydney this week at all.
I'll come to that in a moment. You sit out by the sun, by the pool with your little solar cell next to you, and you can recharge your power monkey from your solar monkey.
Or you can plug it directly into your phone and recharge your phone using solar energy. It's not very good at that.
No. And in fact, what I was hoping to do was to have a test run where I could run my iPhone as a solar-powered iPhone for several weeks.
How'd that go for you?
Not all that well, really? I'm afraid. Sad to say. I'm actually disappointed because I was hoping that this is something that could work and could have worked quite well. What in fact happened was that I was able to get a couple of charges out of the Power Monkey, and I was able to then recharge the Power Monkey. I was sitting here in the studio on Tuesday afternoon with the solar cell, and the sun was streaming in through that window there.
They did say to open the window when you did it.
Well, the thing is that the battery showed that it was fully charged. The battery unit's got a little LED in it that lights red when it's charging and green when it's fully charged.
How quaint.
And it's got a little LCD in it that goes to 5 bars when it's fully charged, and it was at 5 bars and green. So I thought, okay, well, that's fully charged. It was fully charged off the solar cell. That was Tuesday of this week, Tuesday afternoon. Thursday, the iPhone had been fully charged from the Power Monkey and was running down again, so I decided Thursday morning to give it another charge off the Power Monkey. And this is where the disappointment fell in, because, as I said, On Tuesday, it had been indicated to me that it was fully charged. When I went to plug it in on Thursday morning, it showed me 4 bars rather than 5.
Okay, so hold on. Long story short,
it had lost a little bit of power. It appeared to either it lost a bit of power or didn't indicate correct power on Tuesday, number one. Number two, after leaving it for probably about an hour, maybe a little bit less than an hour, when I went to it, the iPhone was not showing me any signs that it was actually getting a charge from the Power Monkey. And instead of seeing the iPhone being recharged, the Power Monkey was dead in the water. It had lost, it had exhausted all of its charge, given a little bit of it to the iPhone, and it was dead.
Okay, so ignoring the fact that you're an old cranky bastard who seems to like slagging off pretty much anything he possibly can.
Speaking of old cranky bastards,
what exactly was your opinion easy of it?
I was disappointed that that didn't work. I think that this is a good device. I think it's a device
second generation, maybe
second generation. I want to give this more of a test because we haven't, because since then I haven't had any sunlight to really play with it.
Yeah, thanks, rain.
Thank you, weather. Yeah. So I want to give this more of a chance to play with and see how we go. We'll see how it goes over the next couple of weeks. I'm willing to give this another go. In the meantime, this is who we got, Lee.
Are you playing the second song or the third?
I'm playing the next song.
Oh, well, let's see you with the girl you lost to cocaine.
Great.
One Radio 2 RDJ. We're not screwing things up here. No, not at all.
No, not too much anyway.
This is what happens when your dad blabs on too much.
Yeah. I always enjoy myself doing this.
Sometimes too much. Anyway, we've got Dave Matthews, two-step playing underneath this. We're going to say goodnight to you. We'll see you next week.
And what are we going to talk about next week?
Next week we're talking about setting up your own website, and hopefully we won't blab too much about that. I know.
Such is life. Hey, we're having fun. We're having a good time.
Who's having fun? I told you to shut up.
And I wasn't. Well, I was
you
paying,
paying attention to me.
No, I was paying attention, but I was paying attention to the wrong thing.
Right. Okay.
So this is Two Step and Dave Matthews Band. We'll be back on the Gadget Grill next Sunday, 2RDJ FM 88.1, 9 PM.
See you next week.